Sing us singing songs of pain. Time may spin and years may pass, the song is still the same.
Tender. There's something really incredible about sung voices coming together.
I really feel like we are actually all connected, but it's something that connection has been severed by the way that we live.
Choral singing offers a place where anyone can find themselves amongst other voices.
When you're in that collective experience, it is less about like how good you are and more about how much you can kind of tune into what everybody else is doing.
You can try something new, you can risk take because you can sing quietly and no one will notice.
In terms of the pitch, you can adjust your pitch if they're off. The time can change.
You can sing quietly because you feel that maybe you don't quite know the tune.
Working collectively or with other people has kind of made me think a lot about listening and the complexity and the barriers in listening.
No,
not strictly.
Strictly.
The voice as resistance.
I'm Vivian Griffin. I'm a visual artist who works a lot with sound and music.
Just want to know how clear my voice is in your ear. Don't hear me, I can't speak up, you know.
I think I have always had sound components in my work, and quite often my voice would be in my work.
Okay, cool. Good.
Transferring this to like a live performance space was something that I found really complicated. My voice never performed in the way that it did when I was maybe recording in a studio on my own or in my house on my own. So I was like really interested in thinking about adrenaline.
Take a second to think about your skin. That's the biggest organ of your body. Now I want you to focus, and I want you to pick an orifice. Pick an orifice and imagine the external surfaces of the orifice.
Ultimately, what I wanted from like live work is like either a collective experience or an experience where I'm communicating. Which sounds kind of obvious, but it's less about performing. That's not the space where I come from. I come from, you know, a visual art perspective.
What does this orifice do? Is it for spitting? Is it for eating? Is it for shitting? Is it for fucking? Is it for crying? Is it for laughing? Listening? Is it for talking? So one of the biggest gifts we can give to ourselves in the midst of busyness is to take what I call the sacred pause.
So I'm Helen Kamak. I'm an artist who works across, I guess, a few mediums. So film, photography, printmaking, performance, writing. When I think about working in voice, the things that are most interesting to me are how we listen and how we hear and also then how we articulate. It's about that interchange, about listening and hearing.
If you make the same piece many, many times, it never be the same. Never.
I'm interested in that in terms of histories and in terms of power structures.
When I decided to speak, I had a lot to say and many ways in which to say what I had to say.
So for me, the way that I work with the voice is about exploring different kinds of structures, like histories, like archives, like libraries. And then in practice, it's about the different kinds of registers of the voice that I'm interested in. So whether that's about writing, whether that's about singing and song.
Can you hear the battle from the convent? For the sound of the trumpet clear.
Whether that's about a kind of articulation in terms of poetry, it's all, I suppose, this idea that I want to tell new stories, different stories.
In composing your life story, you appropriate the actions and events that make up your life, so that everything you have done has been assembled into a whole, so unified that nothing can be subtracted without spoiling the picture. In the end, your life appears as a coherent, motivated, integrated tale, with no loose strands or pointless digressions. It is something you can embrace and fully own.
I began writing probably really bad songs, actually, but, you know, I began writing songs when I felt really isolated, when our family was, we moved from London to the middle of rural Somerset. And it was a really isolating time, and the kinds of experiences we had there were really quite extreme. And so I started, in a kind of inward way, writing songs that were about what was happening. It was the beginnings for me of really understanding that I could vocalise some of the things that I wanted to say to my teachers or the people on the school bus, or but I could say them in a different way. I felt heard.
Choral work has come up in my work quite a bit over the last few years, and it definitely feels quite natural. I come from a culture that is like singing is a big part of Irish culture. Every night always ended up, no matter where you were, it always ended up with people singing, and everyone would have this kind of like a common vocabulary of songs that we all shared. So it was really inclusive, and it was never about, can you sing? You just sang. Like, say, for example, if you're in a recording studio and you're doing a kind of a close mic recording of a song that you've written or a song that you like, I just become hyper-focused on the flaws. Whereas when you sing collectively with the choir, it kind of holds space for like a lot of flaws. So, I did a recent workshop with a group of people, and I've never tried the three-part harmony. And within a really short space of time, they sounded absolutely amazing. So you also feel this real sense of achievement when you've kind of, when you hear collectively what you're producing, and you know, actually, it's not about singing, it's about listening.
It is one thing to speak, it is another to move. There is a courage in reaching towards a sound, in someone else or inside yourself. Make no mistake, there is bravery in sound.
Because there's something about you. I'm listening in your silence. I'm listening in your silence. I sing, I sleep, I feel the rain. Sometimes it doesn't come again. I heard, I cry, I ride.
For me, there is something really particular about sung voices coming together. contained within a song.
I breathe.
Sometimes we can't say things to other people or we can't say things out loud. We can sing them in the containment of a song.
I'm listening in your silence. I sing, I sleep, I feel the rain. Sometimes it doesn't come again.
So across 2021 and 2022, I was part of a project called Radio Ballads with three other artists, which was working for me as my project. It was called Bass Notes and Sightlines. And I was asked to work with both people who offered care as part of their jobs and people who received care and worked together around ideas of the voice as a site of resistance and the body as a site of resilience.
We're going to rock side to side a little bit over the feet, if that's okay. But then actually we're going to take it into our knees and into our hips. Love this one. This is so good. And then we're going to take it into our bodies a bit more. So we're just going to circle around. Nice. You might want a wider stance. Stand however it feels good.
Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah.
So we did some vocal work, we did some movement work, we did some poetry writing. And then I think song started to feel like it needed to be a part of the project. So we tentatively started working with a project called Pause that support women who don't live with their children.
Music is life, it just gets me through everyday, day-to-day things. I just love music.
The idea behind writing the song together as a group was about trying to somehow articulate the experiences that the women had had where they did feel that they resisted, where they did feel that perhaps they had some resilience. Because I think initially when we talked about some of those ideas, it was a bit like, what? Really? This has happened to me. This is where my life is. Do you actually think I'm resilient? Do you actually think that I've resisted? Because I think there was a sensation that people had been done to. And actually, many of the women had historically been done to in many ways in terms of their upbringings, their childhoods. And so it was quite a task to try to think about how we could speak about the things that they had achieved.
Throughout my life, I've always been put down. Like, no one's really appreciating the things that I have achieved, the things that I have done within my life, you know, and it just gives you that emotion that you could be anything, you could do anything, you know, you could be the better of yourself.
For me, it was a natural progression to go from the human voice to the voice of an instrument, like a harp. And that's where the piece for assembly came out. So the piece for assembly is called The Tools of Surveillance and the Tools of Serenity. And the idea that the harp sings and has a voice is connected to the idea that when you pluck a string, the rest of the strings resonate. And you get this quite audible sort of second voice coming in. So I guess the harp has always been in the background of my existence as an Irish person. It's on the currency, it's on our passports, it's everywhere. But I never really thought about it that much until I started working with a traditional Irish music player from Belfast, and thinking about nationality in that context really made me kind of re-examine the history of that instrument. And yeah, there's one person in particular whose work I came across called Una Monaghan, who's an amazing harp player who's been working from a traditional Irish music background from her childhood and now uses electronics with the harp. So I've been thinking about different ways of working with Una, on a score. And I've also made a device for a second harp. That's a motorized device that will activate the strings. So it'll be much more like a noisy or an electronic drone than plucking.
I completely think that there's a healing aspect to singing, yeah, completely. There's something that holds you within what's happening in that space when everybody is doing the same thing and their body and the heat is rising as a choir is singing and singing. I worked in social services in different kinds of roles for about 10 years. It was a moment in the kind of 90s where there were resources. I mean, they were getting more and more and more and more cut, but there were resources and we had the scope to actually do some of the activities that I bring with me now. The reason I left social work is because that started to change. So now what happens for me is I can have a much more, I think, transformative process. There's a kind of freedom that can be brought through a creative project. But you have to be prepared, I think, to take some different kinds of risks.
I started to think about, you know, that idea of like Irishness as a position of longing because there's such a history of migration. And is connected to thinking about my desire to leave Ireland at a certain point and my desire to go back at a certain point and my connection there now. And like, I guess I spent a lot of time in Belfast, and that's been really, yeah, informative and interesting as well, about thinking about nationalism in that context as well, because it's a hugely complex subject in Northern Ireland, obviously. My piece definitely references like traditional Irish music by virtue of the fact that there is a harp. But there's also another element of it, which is ultimately that I didn't grow up steeped in that tradition. I grew up speaking English, and like we're at the point where I'm coming from, it is almost like an outsider looking in to something that I think that I should have ownership of, but actually don't. Like in terms of my nationality, what is that? Because it's not, I didn't grow up in that context. So it's almost like maybe understanding that in terms of, I guess, a post-colonial context for me.
Can you hear Lucretia calling from the convent? Can you hear her rage? Can you hear the sound of her defiance? Can you hear the name? The name, the name, the name of resistance, the name of something here.
So Chorus is a three-screen film. It's part of a project called Kesi Pufare, which kind of has this idea of longing and lament at its core. That's the kind of core idea about this relationship between women and lament, and seeing it as a form of resilience, not seeing it as a weakness, but seeing it as a strength. Can you hear her rage? Folk singing and the traditions of folk music are everywhere in me. And I was thinking about, you know, before coming to speak to you, I was thinking about this idea of the protest song, the peace song, the gospel song, and the kind of spiritual song, their ability to channel a resistance that came from enslaved people. It's the same as prison songs, it's the same as work songs. Often they appear to be simple songs, but the complexity about what they're doing is enormous.
I think the thing that I keep thinking about is this idea of the kind of boundaries of where the human voice ends and digital technology begins. I'm trying to kind of understand our relationship with technology through the voice, my voice, quite often. I work with one song quite a lot, and that's the Sinead O'Connor song, Nothing Compares to You. It's now on its third iteration, but the most recent one is a score that was transcribed from an 18-channel sound work that was an auto-tune choir. I took harmonies from the auto-tune algorithm, essentially, and transcribed them back for a voice. And then I worked with a vocal ensemble in Belfast called Hive, and they sang that live, and then I live processed that again. And yeah, I guess it's this way of covering songs where it gets very removed from the original.
We have decided to protest against internment, and despite the ban on parades, we have decided that we will parade tomorrow through the streets of Derry.
In the film, The Long Note, which is about women's role in the civil rights movement in Northern Ireland, there's a piece of archival footage where a huge crowd in Derry are all singing We Shall Overcome.
We shall overcome someday.
Now, we also know that's a peace song. We know that it was the anthem of the civil rights movement in the US. It also became later one of the civil rights songs in the back end of apartheid years. But the first time it was actually sung was in a tobacco factory, and it was a strike that was happening, and it was led by a woman leading the strike, and she was the first person, I think in 1946, to actually use it as a kind of activist song. But it has managed to shift from all these different contexts, crossing oceans and continents, because it's a song that speaks to the very essence of what it is to feel like we have to make things better. And so I do think there's something really powerful about how songs can transcend cultural dialects, languages, value systems, and can somehow settle within many different kinds of cultures and struggles.
I think there is, and it's like feels really like grassroots when you see songs being used to protests. And even recently at the Palestine protests, like the chants have become quite like rhythmic. You can see that like people are lighting up if they kind of, if they've been to the protests a number of times, it's almost like they know the words, and like that is empowering, and it feels really moving to be part of that. But also, honestly, I would be a bit more nihilistic or depressive about the whole thing, because I kind of don't believe that like the work that I'm doing can change the world or is going to have a massive impact and there's going to be a ripple effect and everyone's going to... I just don't believe that. I think like, yeah, I've been thinking a lot about like kind of activism and what like activism is lately, and for me activism is the opposite of inactivism. So like I'm thinking, you know, small things are meaningful, but I don't have these massive expectations that they're going to have this kind of really powerful effect, sadly.
We speak or make sound because we want a response. The idea of song or the idea of singing is that there's something that comes out, and if it's coming out, it's out in the world, and therefore it has the promise of being heard. And sometimes it takes for something to come out of your mouth before you can really hear it. I'm an artist, I'm a singer, I'm a mother, I'm, you know, sometimes we do need to articulate things in order to hear them for ourselves, you know?